This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we feature singer-songwriter Jeffrey Focal.
I left this town with the throttle open wide. The heater was blowing, but there was nothing inside that could ember the darkness or swallow my pride. When I left this town, I was running. I left this town with the milk and the fire, a rattling hollow itinerant choir that curled me and called me, held me in town. When I left this town, I was gunning. You couldn't understand what I wanted. No one could hold
This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio today Jeffrey Focal.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, great to see you. As we were discussing before we started the interview, we've been trying to schedule this for at least 8 years,
right,
off and on, as you've crisscrossed around the West and through Montana. Jeffrey's a singer-songwriter, of course, very familiar to a lot of our listeners. I'm trying to remember how many recordings you're in, 6, 7, 8, 9?
You know, that's a good question. I think, well, I have five solo albums that are just under my own name, and then I had, you know, I did a couple collaborations with a poet named Lisa Olstein, who puts her books out on Copper Canyon Press, and that band was called Cold Satellite, and we toured some, but not a ton, mostly, I guess, in the Northeast and in Europe. We did the Midwest. We never got out here. I did a record of a bunch of my favorite John Prine songs, and I did an album of all murder ballads that was mostly acoustic with a friend of mine.
Yeah,
and geez, I feel like there were other ones too.
Oh, but, the project with Peter Mulvey and...
Oh, right, right. So I did a trio record, or I guess it was quartet. Redbird was like three songwriters and a guitar player. Everybody's playing guitar pretty much, and it really was more conversational. We were trying to recreate the sort of hotel room sessions that we would have on the road, where we'd get back from a gig and we'd sit down in the hotel room and just trade songs back and forth. It happened that Chris Delmhorst, who I happen to be married to, and Peter
convenient.
And Peter Mulvey, who I'm not married to, but we are old friends, and David Goodrich, you know, we all know a lot of songs.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from. And for a while, we would play two shows a year, one at Christmas back at the bar where I started playing in Wisconsin, and one in Boston area at Club Passim in the summertime. Mm-hmm. And we'd do like a 3-night stand at each one of those things.
Well, you have some Montana connections. I know you kind of come out here before you started playing gigs out here. You were coming out here just to recreate, just to spend some time fishing, get on the river and stuff. Let's talk about that a little bit because, you know, before we can get to music, Montana audiences and, well, audiences around the world who are interested in Montana, certainly fishing and rivers and things like that come to their mind.
Yeah, well, I have some real good friends. Last night we stayed down in Lolo with my friend David James Duncan, who's a writer. I had read his books before I ever met him. And then he and I did a benefit show together for the Liam Wood Fly Fisher and River Guardian School, which is a program that tries to get at-risk kids from up and down the I-5 corridor out on the water with a fly rod in their hands. Hmm. And so it was Duncan and myself and Sherman Alexi at Western Washington University, and they read and I played. It was a ton of fun. I've never done anything quite like that. It was sort of like I told everybody. It reminded me of my my recurring dream of playing the Kennedy Nixon debates.
except
I was fully clothed. There.
That's a pretty specific dream.
No, I was just making stuff up. I mean, Duncan was on one side at a lectern, and Sherman was on the other side at a lectern, and they both read, and in between each of their readings, I would play something to do with rivers for the most part. So, and we've been real good friends ever since. So when I come to town, I often stay with him. My friend Chris Dombrowski lives here in town, and he's a longtime fishing guide and pretty good at it, too. And he's also a poet. And so we have corresponded, and our families have vacationed together, and he's one of my favorite people in the world. So I always come and see him, you know, either to, I guess this year we might do a little bird hunting, and we're going to hopefully get out to fish. You never know. Yeah. I've already been fishing for the last 10 days, so I guess I could sleep well if I didn't get
another
chance.
That's pretty good. Yeah. So, I mean, this is serious business. This is not just I'm going to go to Montana and kind of, you know, throw a few casts out. This is
It's true. You know, the touring season really picks up in the fall, and then that's when all the fishing is good. So that's an unfortunate
juxtaposition.
Yeah, thing. And in the spring, that's a lot of touring. So I usually manage to get out here and try to salt away a little bit of peace of mind before I have to be on the road and living in airports and hotels and rental cars for a few months on and off. I spent one fall living at somebody's house, taking care of their property in Wyoming, north central Wyoming. And I promised myself at the end of that I'd try to get back out west at least once a year. And, you know, I don't get to live here as yet, so I try to get out as often as I can.
As yet. I heard that as yet.
Well, you know, hope springs eternal. I have a house and a mortgage and a barn and a car that runs and a bunch of chickens and, you know, and that's all out in New England. And that's not the part of the country where I feel most at home, but that's where I've made a home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where I'm going to be for a little while.
Slow talk. I called and woke you up. And I wonder who I thought I was. When I knew you for a little while, did I know you? Is that just your style? Like a river underground, speaks thunder and never makes a sound. You said there's one note you can play it. There's one word.
got your collar turned up cool. You keep rocking, I'm right behind you. There's one note you can play.
Jeffrey, we've talked about your connections to Montana, and I wanted to go back to another nice place, another beautiful part of the world, Wisconsin, your home state.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, this is something I've been asking a lot of songwriters recently. Is there something that is distinctly either Whitewater, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. or Wisconsin about your music?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that wherever you grow up, your perception, and certainly your sense of language, those things are all tied to the landscape that you, that's impressed on you. And so you can get out of the Midwest, but to me, you know, I'm still, all my songs still live in the Midwest. If I write them on a train in Italy or, you know, or while I'm on the road somewhere, it doesn't matter. The songs still live in that space for me. And, at this point, you know, I travel around with Billy Conway. He's my drummer, or maybe I'm his singer. And Billy was born in Iowa and grew up in Minnesota. And then, you know, I'll play with Bo Ramsey. He's from mm-hmm. Iowa. Eric Haywood, great pedal steel and electric guitar player. He was born and raised in Mount Vernon, Iowa. And so everybody except the bass player grew up in the Midwest. And he calls us the Midwestern Travel Advisory Bureau because all we do is talk about, you know, what we love about the upper Midwest. But there's something about it. I think there's a simplicity or maybe just a muted quality to the landscape that you have to look harder. You know, you get out west and for the first time and your jaw sort of hits the floor. You see all these beautiful cinematic mountains and rivers and plains and you have to work a little bit harder in the Midwest, but the beauty is there, and it shows up in sort of accumulated detail. And after a while, I think you see the beauty. You know, it gives you a little bit more work to do, and maybe that becomes a habit of mind in terms of the way that you look at things.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of my favorite writers all come out of the Midwest, and that's, you know, Bob Dylan and John Prine, and Greg Brown is certainly one of my favorites. The first time I came to Missoula, I was opening for Greg at the university.
I remember that.
We had a great time.
Yeah.
And he drank all my bourbon. By the time I got back to the green room from my opening set, it was pretty much gone.
Yeah. That's great.
We used to walk together. There was no tea with honey, tell me to see your lights. Run my world those late spring nights. When nothing else was real as a child, to keep your heart above my water.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight, and we're speaking today with Jeffrey Foucault. Jeffrey, hearing you talk about the Midwest, it brings me to a song from your most recent album, Salt is Wolves. The song is called Des Moines. Hmm. And I wanted to ask about that song specifically, but also the concept that I heard you mention in another interview of writing around the song.
Yeah. So that was a song. I remember sending it to Dombrowski in a letter with the printed lyric and asking him, you know, does this, here's what I'm trying to do, and do you think I did it? Because the song, it's kind of a funny idea, but the song is about just this one gig, and in all of these gigs. It was about 10 years ago, and I picked up Eric Haywood at the airport. He flew in from L.A., and I put him in the car, and we drove to the club. I guess we stopped at a guitar store and screwed around for a while, and then we got to the club and found out that the show was advertised for the wrong time. So we were going to play earlier than we thought. We weren't going to have time to eat. So we sat down, we had a couple of drinks, and we knew nobody was going to be there because they all thought the show was starting an hour later than it was. But there was another band on the bill later that night. So we're like, all right, let's sit down and play. And so there was only six or eight people in the room in this little club in Des Moines. And we had an experience that you sometimes have when you're a performer, where everything just worked out right. It's the same feeling when you're fishing a river and you have that brief illusion of competence where you do everything right and you catch fish and you think, yeah, I've got this down. And then it just dissipates, goes away, and you can't say why. And you could spook it. The moment you say, hey, I'm really doing a great job here, that's death. It's going to be gone. So we would barely even look each other in the eye during this set. And we had played together a bunch, and we had toured a record I made called Ghost Repeater as a duo overseas. I couldn't afford to bring a whole band at that point. And so we had the songs down. We hadn't seen each other in a long time, and there was just something magic about sitting down and playing. And the fact that no one was there posed this question to me about, you know, how much does it matter? I mean, obviously you're trying to communicate with people, and you're hoping to make a human space for people to feel something when you make art of any kind, but, you know, certainly in live performance. And I wanted to know, does it matter? You know, like, nobody, you know, we played great for no one. And it's without, you know, sounding like a college undergrad, you know, talking about a tree falling in the woods and nobody heard it. I wanted to tell the story, but I wanted to tell the story without trying to be specific about the feeling of what happened, because that thing was sort of evanescent anyway, and certainly not necessarily subject to explication. So I tried to tell the narrative of everything except what it felt like to be on stage, everything except what it sounded like. You know, I could have tried to wax poetic about the tone of Eric Haywood's pedal steel that night, but it didn't seem like simile or metaphor was going to cover that ground very effectively. So wrote a song where, you know, I tell the events of the day in no linear order and try to make this feeling of everything happening at the same time. And I really picked that up from reading about Bob Dylan when he was a painter. There was a period, I'm sure he still paints, but there was a period where he got very serious about it. That's around the mid-70s, you know, the same time he did Blood on the Tracks. And so you take these songs that have narratives, like, say, Tangled Up in Blue, where he's moving pronouns around, so you can never figure out who the hell he's talking about. It's he, she, they, us, we. And what he manages to do by creating a narrative that uses pronouns that way is create a canvas, the same way that you look at a painting. Everything on the painting is happening at one time, and your eye is drawn to particular details at random, almost. And you can do that same thing with a song, and if you do it right, it creates this strange suspension of time, And I think the feeling comes through in that song, regardless whether or not anybody can take away like what story I was trying to tell.
Yeah, yeah. Hearing you talk about, you know, that moment where you're engaging the other musician and you things are working, you're clicking, and then you look at each other, and then from that point forward, I think that's what the story went. It kind of didn't train wreck, but it just was not. Yeah. It wasn't happening.
Well, the beer wore off. That's part of it. It also, but yeah, it's you can spook.
It's like touching the muse.
Yeah, exactly. You can spook the good stuff if you look at it too directly, or if you're sort of impolite about it. So you have to try to, not make eye contact. Or if you do, you don't ever say, man, we're killing it right now.
That night in the morning, gone on the streets and died. Sunset building, cup of shade. We sent our smoke up through the streetlights. We sent our prayers out through an old PA. That night in the morning. That night in the morning. That night in the morning. Too late for supper. Yeah, we sat at the bar and we drank three beers and we watched the house filling up. No one but God was listening and he cupped his ear. That night in the morning. That night in the morning.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with singer-songwriter Jeffrey Focal. Jeffrey, I'm going to ask you the same question I recently asked Josh Ritter, which I've asked other songwriters before, but I'm always fascinated with this concept. When you are writing, do you start off writing with an idea of what you are going to write about, or do you let the writing itself, the process, guide you into what what it's going to be about?
You know, ideally, you show up for work every day and you play guitar or whatever your chosen instrument is, and you sit down and you're generating ideas. I mean, I write all the time, and I've got, you know, a couple different books going. Some of them have poems and grocery lists and other random things in there, phone numbers. And some of them are more like a fair copy type thing where I'll write a song on the right-hand side, and I'll make notes on the left-hand side. And I have books going back for almost all the records that work that way. And what I found over the course of doing it for the last, you know, 15, 16 years or so, at least as a professional, for whatever that's worth, is that the best stuff is the stuff that I have no intention for. It just happens. And the work and the discipline of showing up to work are there so that you're in the position to capitalize on those things when they happen. So regardless whether you start out with a goal, you know, where you're trying to be very, you know, like, I'm writing about this thing, I'm writing to an end point, you can do that, and it sets up a nice structure, a nice context and framework for getting your work done. 9 times out of 10, that song, absent some sort of strange invention that leaps out of your brain and that you have no real authorship of, will be an uninteresting song. It's only really going to be interesting to me if I don't know where it came from. Mm-hmm. And the best lines fall out of the sky. But if you never pick up the pencil, you won't remember them. So you got to just have the discipline to show up every day and hope that that sort of thing happens. Me and people talk about the muse, I guess, that way. And that's never been a conscious operating principle for me. But I do think that if you're paying attention to the way that your brain works, you can put yourself in the position to be lucky, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. JeffreyFoucault.com is the name of the website. I'm going to spell Jeffrey's last name for our listeners. FOUCAULT. Salt as Wolves is the most recent recording. Jeffrey, thanks so much for making time to come by and talk shop with us today. Musician Spotlight's been great.
Thank you, John. It was a pleasure.
You got a heart like a hurricane. You got a heart like a hurricane. And I see you shine anywhere I am.
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today has been Jeffrey Foucault. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as through iTunes. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.